Magic, it's working. That's always a good sign. Welcome everyone. This is module 10, the first week of module 10. We're talking about coaching with the client's goals and dreams. And if this is anything like this morning's class, we're gonna have a bit of fun just playing with this and looking at how we can support our clients. Just to give you a sense of what's coming, we'll have these two classes. We'll have a closing circle just to kind of acknowledge the time that we've had together. And then we'll have an extra class, probably a week or two after our closing circle, which will be all about certification. I just want to run through that with you and take any questions and all that jazz. And then you will be able to join the supervision calls from probably from November. It'll probably all hook up, so you've got kind of almost like a week's gap, and then you can join the next supervision call.
Can you just tell us when those calls will be, 'cause so that I can kind of, plan around
Of
the
course.
supervision ones that come up. Is it on a particular day at time?
It will be on the same class time.
Okay, so Tuesday at 5.
So it'll be Tuesday at 5, and it will
Perfect.
probably, I'm just checking the.
That's all right. As long as I know it's Tuesday at 5, I can kind of keep that
Okay,
going.
great.
Yeah, brilliant.
But I'll confirm the dates and times probably tomorrow. I'm just waiting for something to be confirmed at my end because I don't want to have to shuffle you around. Rest assured, we will have the rest of the program, which is the two module 10 calls, and then the closing call. We'll have a certification call, and then I think there'll probably be a week's break at some point in there, and then there'll be the first support supervision call where you'll also get to meet other graduates, and they're really fun old calls. So you might see some familiar faces in there. So it's all good times. Okay, so let's talk about coaching with the clients' goals and dreams. So, I guess the thing I want to share around this is, well, let me just before I get started and carried away here, what we're going to talk about today. By now, I'm sure this format is pretty straightforward for you. We're going to talk about courage-based goals, plans, and action today, and then next week we'll cover off the kind of general change cycle. Which will just help to hopefully bring the whole of SBCA together and give you a sense of working with clients at different stages. So that's kind of our aim. The reason that we are ending with goals and dreams, I call them goals and dreams because some clients are actually quite goal adverse, I found. They're like, oh, I'm not really a goal person, don't really like goals. And so we need to be quite loose around that language. Like if it's an intention, a dream, who cares? What I have found in working with clients over the years is that as soon as they had the courage to even say, this is what I want, which often took some time, there would then be the inevitable experience of them wanting to take very specific actions in a straight line over a specific time frame. And as soon as they encountered some kind of setback or challenge, they would quit. You may find this trajectory of goal setting familiar. It's very, very common, right? And I think it's because we've got the idea of goals a bit wrong. And often I think, well, in the same way that our protector tries to hold us back from the things that we find risky, our protector will also hold us back from the things that we want, particularly if we haven't done that before, if we haven't created something we want before, or often you'll find that people believe it was just luck that it turned out that way, right? So when I started coaching with clients, I found that things like goals, motivation, mindset stuff, all the usual great, useful tools that we're taught in coach training didn't actually apply. Because people would then use the evidence that they've quit on their goal as sort of like further ammo that they weren't capable of achieving their goal. And I was like, this can't be right. We have to change the process, right? And just to give a little bit more context, before I retrained as a coach in my late 30s, I was a management consultant. So I worked on big risky projects. Like the last project, one of the last projects I worked on before I retrained was the biometric UK passport. So I was a program director for all the 7 regional offices creating forensically identical booklets. Huge nightmare, IT people, factory people, security people. It was just a big old mess of a project. We had like best of breed Cambridge physics graduates in our program team who were always trying to keep the program plan reflecting reality, and it never did, right? So all of the, and this happens on big projects all the time. And so I think that for our, you know, beloved clients who are individuals, there is almost this perception that somehow there is a perfect way to do a project, or there is a way to create a goal, and I must be doing it wrong, right? And so I kind of came into coaching going, well, that doesn't work in reality. A bit cynical, I might add. And I think also just very conscious of how clients with self-doubt would just, you know, kind of not do it. And then, of course, they would lose faith in the coaching process and, you know, would often go, I don't think this is working, right? And so for me, it was, well, there must be a way. Right, there must be a way that we can do this, because I don't believe that this is about your capability. I think this is about the stories you're telling yourself about who you are. Hence, I started going for this non-linear planning, a lot of trial and error, and using it myself on various things. You know, that flush of evangelistic coaching energy you get when you're like, oh my God, this is the secret to being a grown up. I'm going to apply all my coach training to myself. I did that. But I found that actually this approach is a lot more flexible, and it gives clients a lot more leeway. You know, it makes room for all the human aspects of bringing a goal to life. Yeah. So what I wanted to do today is talk a bit about the aims of this process, but also how we can work really effectively with our clients, some things to look out for. And because we're a lovely small group, we can do some chats around, you know, how this might be applied to your people in particular. Yeah. All right. Enough from me. Let me share my screen. Okay. So key principles here: there is no ideal right or linear process to achieving goals, right? Like a goal in the kind of, you know, bro coaching land, a goal is you set a really ambitious target and then you take action to create that, to meet that target. And if you find that there are setbacks or challenges or things you don't know, then you just white knuckle your way to getting there. You beat yourself up to get there. And often it's quite a painful process. And I have found that a lot of clients who have gone through that, right, who have that more probably overworking sort of protective behavioral style, will do that, will beat themselves up along the way. Often they then get to the goal and there's grief, because now they've achieved the thing, but they don't feel great about themselves, haven't enjoyed the process, and it feels like if I take this any further, it's just more of the same, right? So for me, let's start from a different place. We hold it to be true that there is no right way to do this, right? There isn't, so therefore we take failure off the table, right? There's just the client's way, the client's pace, and we're supporting them to bring us to life, and we're doing that in a really thoughtful way. We also hold true that there are inevitably going to be setbacks and challenges, and self-doubt will come up, probably because you're doing something for the first time, often because you're doing something that really matters to you. So it, the risk is compounded because of that. But also, nothing ever happens the way we think it's going to. We often plan a thing without knowing the information. Like, you know, so a lot of our role in coaching clients with goals is very much to normalize the fact that, well, you couldn't have known that then. You couldn't have known how you would feel when you got to here, right? So the planning and the goal setting process, the bringing the goal to life, is very much a dynamic process, right? It's not static. So for those of you who love to create a lovely kind of color-coded plan and then follow it to the T, it's like, oh man, this is different. So what I have found is that the meta process, like the whole reason for realizing a dream, achieving a goal, is because of who the client becomes along the way. Right? So it's the expansion of the self-concept. It doesn't really matter what the goal is. It's, you know, can you become the person who can receive the end point? Can you become the client? Can the client become the person who's like, This is something that I'm living into, I'm becoming, right? And this is really useful to remember when we might get a bit entangled with our clients' goals, right? So when our clients bring to us, Jane, I'm thinking of your clients, you know, I want to have a creative practice, and you're like, yep, I'm totally down with that. I want you to have a creative practice too. And then they meet these setbacks and they fail along the way. Or they have, you know, challenges along the way. They want to give up, etc. Sometimes it's about permission giving. Like, has that changed? You know, has the goal changed? Then maybe it's not about having a creative practice. Maybe the reason for the creative practice was actually about having some time on your own that you wanted to carve out during the day. So that can look different. It doesn't always have to be about creating in some way. Right? So we are lovingly detached from our clients' goals, whether they achieve them or not, or how they do that. Yeah. Because it's not about the goal, really. It kind of is and isn't. Yeah. So, and this is something that I just think is super helpful to hold, is that when you're advocating for the client's growth, not their goals, it's much easier to stay out of that entangled place. We don't think we know best about what the goal should be or how capable they are of doing it. Yeah. I just want to pause there. How's that kind of landing for everybody? All good? Anyone want to share anything? Yeah, Tina, go for it.
I just think what you've said is huge. It's huge because I think coaches, we push for that action, we push for the outcome, and a lot of times it's because that's how we have to market. I can promise you this outcome, and so there's the entanglement right there. So if they fail, there goes our marketing, you know. So it's just huge. Bingo. A big mindset shift.
Bingo. And you'll see the coaches, right, who do that. They do the hashtag humble brag, right? Let me share about my amazing clients. But, you know, I mean, we just have to look at the stats of people who, you know, do any kind of online learning. The completion rates of any online learning, no matter how excited you are at the start of it, the completion rate is dire. It's dire, right? So I'm always curious to know what's happening with all the clients that the coach is working with that aren't getting amazing results. Like, who's supporting them? You know? So I think you're absolutely bang on, Tina. Like, there is something quite, I don't know, a bit crunchy about recognizing where we might be tying our own sense of success to our clients' behavior. And we'll talk a bit about that, about how our goals can sometimes set us up for that kind of failure because they're out of our control. So, yeah, exactly. So yeah, lovingly detached from the client's goals, very much interested in their growth, not necessarily their goal. And I can't even tell you how many people I've worked with where they'll bring along a goal that they think is kind of like the thing that they sort of feel like they should be interested in or want. And then if you get excited about that goal, and through the course of coaching, you both realize that isn't the goal. They may feel then, I can't tell you. I'll be letting you down. I'll be letting my coach down if I say I don't want to do this anymore. So, you know, I just think full permission giving to all clients that if they ever want to change their mind or they realize, oh no, this isn't actually the goal I'm aiming for. How great is that to say, to witness that and go, let's get something that you're really interested in. You know, let's get you excited about something that you really want to achieve. The energy shifts, the trust builds, all of that good stuff. Yeah. So let's talk about this approach. Courage-based goals lead to courage-based plans, simplest planning process ever. So anyone who uses planning as an excuse to buy new stationery, I'm gonna ruin that for you. and that leads to courage-based action, right? So there, you can see the theme here, right? You can see the theme. Something to notice. I think these are good principles for the goals, and we're going to talk about for the majority of today. We'll talk a lot about how to get good goals, right? But I think there's in the process of getting our clients' goals kind of articulated, I think they need to make room for emotions, for self-doubt, allow for unexpected brilliant ideas that come along when the client's in the inaction and goes, oh, hang on, I can take it in this direction. We provide some support and accountability. And I'm quite specific about that it is generally about, or genuinely about, supporting the client to be accountable. All right, so notice where you might be taking accountability. Providing a record of progress and lessons, and let the client lead through their vision, their values, their intentions. Like, it's got to matter to them. Yeah. If you have a goal that does all those things, the client will become someone new along the way, or will expand who they are along the way. That's the kind of meta goal that we've got here, right? So, and yeah, account for changing levels of courage. And this is the bit that I think people get a bit hooked up on. This was the bit of a breakthrough for me in, you know, formulating this approach was, oh, it's when the client is like, you know, having PMT or a range of complex responsibilities have, you know, overtaken their day, or, you know, stuff that's just harder to get to do today, we've got to have, you know, we've got to take that into account. Otherwise, what we're saying is, you know, unless you have, you know, 4 hours free a day, you better, you know, there's no point trying, kind of thing. So all of this is about taking into account the client's humanity, their experience, their real life. Yeah. So what you'll notice is that we've kind of come full circle, right? And so this is back in module 4 when we were talking about uncovering protective beliefs, right? Your clients usually have a bit of a goal to start with, right? Something that they are coming to coaching for. So the reason I've added this in here is because you can start working with your clients on their goals, right? So this could be the first session they have with you, could be about getting a goal articulated, right? And then what's going to happen is, as they start taking action, you'll probably then get access to the protective beliefs that come up, right? Because instead of taking action, you'll start to see how their resistant behaviors, those 6 P's, come up: the procrastination, perfectionism, people pleasing, etc. Right. So while SBCA is kind of formulated in, you know, follows a trajectory of how you might work with a client, there's no rules, obviously. And what you may find is that you have quite goal-oriented clients, in which case this is, you could start with their goals, and then you can always go back through the process as they are taking action. Yeah, it's one of the things we do in self-belief school is we kind of set a goal at the end, and then we sort of go back through and look at, once we do goals at the end of the process, but then we go back through and use the goal as a mechanism for exploring, oh, here's where we need some self-acceptance today, right? Here's where you know, we've got a belief we need to bust, right? Cool. So this is how we articulate goals, and this is quite carefully thought through. So I will often let the client like complete this before we have a session, and then talk it through in the session. And I've spent the whole session talking through a goal and getting that clear, right? So we're asking sort of six main questions. You know, why does this matter now? How do they think they're going to feel when they complete the goal? What is their self-doubt saying? What is their healthy self saying? How will their life be the same when they complete the goal? And how will it have changed? What will be expanded, right? So some things to, the reasons behind these quite intentional questions is what we really want for a client's goal is for it to have meaning for them. Right, it needs to have some, you know, some connection to them. And what might happen is that it takes a while to get to the heart of that meaning. Right, so like I said, you know, sometimes client will come along with a sort of surface goal, and it might be something like, you know, I really want a successful business, or I really want this kind of promotion, I really want to lose weight, I want to make this amount of money, all of that kind of jazz, right? And as we probe into, well, why does this matter now? And why does it matter now? You start to see what might be underneath that. You know, oh, actually, I really want to be validated. Or, I've struggled with weight loss my whole life, and this is the opportunity I have to do this. So it's really important to me. So having this conversation with the client, you're really going to get to the heart of why it really matters to them, but also their expectations of themselves, right? What they actually believe they're capable of. Some of their protective beliefs might come up. The thing to watch out for is a goal that is binary, right? So it kind of means if I don't get this job, I failed, right? Rather than a goal that, so if someone says, I need to be promoted to VP at my company, if that's the goal, which, you know, a lot of clients will have something that's quite specific like that. If they don't get VP at their company, then the goal is a pass-fail criteria, right? It's binary. But if we go a bit deeper and look at why does that matter? What do they want to feel? You know, what will change? We're actually then helping them to articulate the next move in their career. It's much more expansive, right? It's nothing to do with that job. It's to do with where are they going? What has meaning for them in their work? Yeah. In the same way that, you know, if you've got a client who, you know, wants to lose weight, for example, and they're like, this is the amount of weight I've got to lose. And I say this because this comes up with clients all the time, no matter how body positive the whole world is. This is a goal that comes up all the time, right? But the clients idea of that is part of, you know, the system of diet culture, it means that unless they hit that number, it's a fail, right? And so when we are looking at what that looks, you know, what that looks and feels like and really getting underneath, you know, I just really want to feel good in my skin. You know, it may be that we articulate a goal that sounds something more like, I want to cherish my body. It gives way more scope for all the different ways you can do that, right? So we're looking out for binary goals. Is there a pass-fail criteria? And how can you support your client to, you know, be set up for success, be set up for something that actually would feel really good to them? And the second lookout is for goals that are beyond the client's control, right? So something like, well, the example of the job at this company, right? They don't make that decision. So, you know, so it, again, it becomes a, it's like, well, you're then going to make meaning out of that decision that has nothing to do with you. You couldn't have controlled it. You can rock up and have the best interview ever, and then it goes to someone that, you know, the boss knows, or someone from a different department who has more experience. You couldn't have done anything about that. So again, it's about, you know, articulating goals that actually connect the client to their values, is something that has meaning for them. And the reason for that is if the meta goal is about expanding the sense of self for the client, then if we're giving that credit to someone else's decision, they won't be able to internalize this. So it reinforces things like imposter syndrome, where people are more likely to put any good fortune down to luck, not hard work. Right. So the idea is that we're looking for goals that have meaning to the client, that is within their control, something that they can contribute to. And this kind of takes failure off the table. I just want to pause there and just check in. How's that kind of going for you all? What do you think your clients would make of this? What might they be kind of challenged by or excited by? Yeah, Jane.
I'm just thinking of past clients that I've had that things that they've said when we kind of alter our goals to go more in these directions. It's things like worried about not being motivated enough if it's not ticking those boxes of like performing for somebody else. Like they're afraid that they won't have that inner drive to achieve it without those external markers.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Just to keep re-gearing them back to what it is they want to feel from that, not only doing it and receiving that outward validation or whatever, like how they actually internalize that and how they can provide that for themselves along the way.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the way that I like to work with clients is we do 30-day goals. So we're going to talk about how to do that in a second. But I think it can be, the reason I love 30-day goals is you can do a hell of a lot in 30 days, and it's not too stretchy a time frame where someone thinks, crikey, that's me committed for the next, you know, however long, right? So it has its built-in sense of urgency with it. It also means that for clients who are like, well, this is bollocks and it won't work for me, right? That's an English term, which means it's not a very good idea. then the idea is that you can say, cool, let's do it this way to start, and then we can do it your way for the next goal, right? We can choose a goal that is all about getting validation from someone else, and we can see how that feels. That's different, right? The thing that people will say to me often, and I've just asked for some feedback about subjects that people want to talk me to talk about on the podcast, and I had half a dozen people say variations of, how come no matter what praise people give me, I don't feel good enough? That's because external validation doesn't work. It doesn't go in. Because if you don't trust yourself, then the person who's saying, oh my God, you're amazing, but you don't feel that, it's like you can't trust that person now because you feel like you fooled them. If they only knew me, right? So this is a very common kind of protective belief that comes up. So all to say, when a client is bringing you a goal that, you know, and you can, you know, I try and do this with a bit of humor. Where it's like, okay, not only what does your healthy self thing, but if they say, oh, well, that will be the reason my dad loves me again or whatever, then you're like, okay, cool. What is your dad going to say, right? You can kind of take that and run with it, right? Really go in there. Why does that matter? Why does that matter is a great question to keep asking a client. To get really into those, you know, real deep beliefs. And they may not have sat and paused and thought, why the hell do I want to do this? You know, just that example, I'm reminded of a client I worked with a few years ago, really hot shit lawyer of Southeast Asian descent, who really wanted to be a yoga teacher. That was her dream. And she was doing it on the side and building up quite a nice chunky business. But she was like, if I do this, then this will happen, right? So she had this very binary kind of idea of what was going to happen. And we had to play with those beliefs. You know, if you follow through on your dream, there is a risk that your dad won't agree with that, right? But that was the risk, right? And so it becomes then an opportunity to look at what's getting in your way. What is the belief that you have about whether or not you deserve this dream or goal, whether you're capable or not, or what other people might think of it? They are always going to be kinds of the beliefs that come up. But I think it's quite interesting you're bringing this up, Jane, as the inverse, right, of, well, I want to do this goal because then I'll get the validation that I think I need. And to me, that's another protective belief to look at. Any other thoughts? Oh, nice to see you. Any other thoughts, ideas, ponderings as we talk about these goals? How might your clients receive this news that we're not going to beat them into submission to get to their levels of achievement? Kelly, I'm wondering about your youthful dudes. What might they think about all of this?
Yeah, I was just thinking the same. And it feels like, you know, what you were just saying about, you know, business people kind of relates to my young people as well. It's like, you know, they're all looking for validation, really, whether that be from their peer group or from their parents, from their teachers. You know, if I get all A's, then I'm going to be good enough for my parents. Or if I, you know, behave in this way, then I'm going to be good enough to fit into this peer group, even though I don't really want to be there. You know, it's all that stuff that goes on. So we're kind of looking more at, like, coming back to trust the gut a little bit, you know, because none of them do. It's like, I kind of, like, I was talking to one girl the other day, and she said, Like she wants, when she's in a bigger group, she's all right with one or two friends, but when she's in a bigger group, she just feels, she just shuts down. She can't, she wants to say something, but she's so scared of saying the wrong thing. And even when it's on a text, she'll text out, like if it's a group chat, she'll text out a reply, which is her gut. And then she goes, maybe I'm not going to send that. Not because it's anything risky, just because she's like, what if I say the wrong thing? What if they don't think I'm funny? What if all this stuff? You know, it's like, okay, so you're really not trusting yourself at all, you know, and that's where we're kind of doing the work is like.
Well, and that's the risk, right? If I say what I is in my heart, then that won't somehow make the grade.
Yeah, yeah. And what does that feel like? And then, and so we're now thinking about what's the, so she's shut down to the point where she doesn't really talk to anyone. So I'm like, what's the smallest possible step that you can take? It's like, there's one girl in my chemistry class that I sit next to who seems quite nice. So, okay, well, let's chat to her. Let's start there, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, and this girl is amazing.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, we're just slowly. So it's just that comparison with, like, it could be a business or it could be a teenager. It's all the same stuff, isn't it?
All the same stuff. Yeah. And I guess this is the reason why I think it's so healthy for us to be unattached to the goals, is we don't give a toss, right? Whether or not she learns to, you know, be super comfortable in a big group, couldn't care less. But it sounds like underneath this is a feeling of, you know, a longing for connection and acceptance, you know, a longing to have, you know, someone that she can be herself with. If that's one person, the mate in chemistry class, bloody genius, you know, that's a win for her. And, you know, then it becomes, you know, up to her about where she takes that.
Yeah. And through that process, she will grow in confidence, and therefore we can then go, okay, what's the real goal now? We've got your friend sorted, you know, what else is there?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and I guess one of the things that you're bringing up for me, Kelly, is what will sometimes happen is that clients will bring their biggest, scariest, hairiest goal as the first thing they ever try, right? And this is one of the reasons why I say, let's look at what you can do in 30 days.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you'll find actually taking action on the big, scary, hairy stuff is just too much. And you're in so much resistance around it that it, you know, you don't kind of get the experience of seeing yourself complete something, of seeing yourself expand into something. So sometimes I will say, like, give me your top three goals and let's pick one, you know, and you get a feel for what feels kind of doable, knowing that, you know, if you're going to work with someone over 3 months, you'll have a chance to do all of them, kind of thing. But yeah, I think sometimes clients will bring the thing that it's like, if I can just sort this out, I will be fine, right? Which is kind of magical thinking, you know? Yeah. So it can sometimes be, you know, a process of, you know, it's a bit of a balancing act, because we want to nurture our clients' dreams and goals, of course. We don't want to be too attached to them, but we also want to help set them up for success, you know. And success isn't necessarily achieving the goals. Success is, you know, having that experience of seeing who you can become along the way, right? So it's more complex, I think, than we give it credit for, because we're holding some things for the client that may seem a bit contradictory, you know.
And it feels like, you know, when you kind of say it out loud, it's like, someone hasn't got friends, da, 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 you know. But actually, the impact of that, if we can't kind of work on her self-esteem, it's going to affect her when she comes to think about university, stuff like that.
Totally, yeah, it is. And I think this is the thing, right? So you start to see, oh, I've got a goal, a 30 days of connection kind of goal, right? And then it's like, can she take all different opportunities to connect? Strangers in the street, talking to somebody, you know, at the corner shop, you know, who does she pass on her way? Like, starting small talk, letting herself be in the world and be, you know, connected to other people. What comes from that, you know? And it's all kind of really super low stakes, low risk stuff. And then it can build up to something else, you know? So all to say, you know, I'm hoping you can start to see that you get to, by probing a little deeper beyond what a client might bring as a goal, you get to help them create one that's really powerful for them to, you know, get kind of excited about. Yeah. Yeah, Tina.
I have a client. I don't really know that I have words for it, but it's her protector that I can see. And there's been a couple of this. It's my more high achieving clients. It's very much like that angry coach, it's like a very sports. And so like the moments where I've tried to encourage her to be nurturing, or if I myself am nurturing, that is seen as weakness. And so the times that I have kind of backed away from the goals that have that number, and that, because, you know, she's also not meeting those goals in reality, but that's also seen as you're letting me off the hook. Like there's almost this like internalized, I don't know, it feels like toxic masculinity, but she's a lady. So it's yep. like,
yeah. Well, I think Tina, you know, you're bang on in describing how we've been taught to see goals. There's often, you know, some kind of drill sergeant screaming yeah. at her to just get on with it. Just right. do it.
Suck it up.
Yeah. Suck it up. No pain, no gain, all of that rubbish, right? So some things I would probably talk to with my client in your shoes would be things like, why do you think you're not achieving the goals that you currently have? Like, do you think that the approach you're working is actually, you're using is actually working? Because if it is, have at it. It doesn't sound like it is though, right? And the other part of this is she has sought you out because some part of her probably understands that she wants to try something different. Like, Tina, with the best will in the world, you don't strike me as a drill sergeant. And she knows that, right? So it could be an interesting conversation to have. What made you choose me as your coach? Because I'm never going to yell at you. So what is it that you're really looking for here? And I think the other question to maybe ask is, what's at risk if you offer yourself compassion? Because often folks who've grown up in families where there wasn't much compassion to go around don't really trust it. Doesn't quite feel like love, doesn't feel safe. And so part of, I think, our job is to model that it can feel safe, you know. And the client is free to work with whoever they want, you know.
And actually you're more productive when you are kind, I think that's what they worry that's at risk, is that I won't be productive. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's the thing. It's like, well, let's see. let's try another way, and we can always go back to the yelling if that feels good, you know? But I think you're absolutely right. That is really the sort of stereotype of goals, you know, is the yelling drill sergeant boot camp kind of approach. But yeah, it's not great. And you know, there's a ton of research around behavioral change, which we'll talk a little bit more about next week, but you know, there is nothing in the research that suggests to me that is any more effective than offering yourself some support and compassion. Compassion isn't coddling, right? It's not saying, oh, is it too hot? Oh, honey, you just wrap yourself in a blanket and don't leave the house, right? Compassion is saying, oh, it's a bit shit today. Okay, what can we do? Right? So sometimes it's like, redefining that approach too. There's a bit of a robustness with compassion, I think. You know, it can, and you know, a lot of activists I know are filled with compassion, and there's a shit ton of rage that comes with it too, right? So it is that, you know, very kind of, it's fueled by something that is quite, you know, quite fizzy and you know, quite active, that rage. But it's deep. It's about a deep caring. So there isn't room for all of that. Like, let's just wrap ourselves in a blanket and never leave the house. And I think that's the binary that sometimes people get caught up in. If I'm not beating myself up, the only alternative is for me, you know, burritoed on the sofa. And there's probably a middle way, right?
Probably it touched on my insecurities, like, well, gosh, maybe I am being too soft, you know, but I know now, and maybe I'll just be stronger about leading with that. Like, that's not the way.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, isn't it? We're all part of systems, and the systems that we've had around this tend to be, you know, and it doesn't help that, you know, anyone who's had a modicum of success has got a podcast telling you all the hacks and shit that they do to maintain that success, and it's just like, stop listening to these people and just trust yourself. No, it's kind of crazy. So all to say, folks, I think the longer you spend, I mean, this is not about over egging it, but you know, spend some time really getting to the heart of the goal. You will save so much time. If you can get a goal for your client that articulated, that they are kind of excited about, that's connected to their values, that has real oomph for them, there's a real sense of, like, you know, purpose for it. And that might take a little while, right? It might take a couple of conversations. But the whole point here is, you know, the amount of time you spend really getting to the right goal is never going to be wasted. And so once we have a goal articulated for the client, we then engage in the shortest planning process known to humankind, right? Which is, you get the client to make a big old list of all the steps they're going to have to take to over the 30 days to bring their goal to life. And then you get them to plot them on this courage-based plan, right? So it's simply concentric circles with easy, doable, uncertain, and risky kind of categories. So whatever the client feels about a particular task, they decide. They decide where it goes. Right? It's like, how do you feel about doing this? No freaking idea. Don't even want to think about how I do that, but probably I'm going to have to do that. Okay, that sounds like it's in the risky category. We will get to that later. Right. And there'll be other things that are super easy, that are like, there's no resistance. I know exactly what to do to tick that off. Okay. Notice if you've got lots of tasks in the risky zone or lots of tasks in the easy zone. Right. That usually means if there's lots of risky tasks, that they need to be broken down quite a lot. Right. So, for example, I had a client who was, she was funded through grants, and she had a charity funded through grants, and she'd sort of taken over as a role. And the worst part of that process for her was making phone calls to, you know, to clarify the submissions. So we were like, okay, let's just put that in the risky basket. But, you know, there were other things, like she was like, oh, man, so easy to set up a template for a grant approach, right? So there'll be tasks that your clients are really comfortable doing and tasks that they find really, really risky, and they just get to decide where they go. If it's easy, it's something that they can crack on with no resistance. Doable, there's probably a little bit of, I'm not sure if I can do this, or I don't quite know how to go about this, or I have, you know, some self-doubt around it, some resistance around it. Maybe it's two easy tasks rather than one doable one. Right. The idea, though, is that the client is getting into the momentum of completing tasks really fast. So within, you know, a few hours of putting their plan together, they should be getting one of their easy tasks done. The reason for this is that what feels uncertain at the start, as you get into momentum, your sense of safety and comfort and kind of doability expands. So someone who is halfway through a 30-day goal is likely to be feeling pretty, like the doable and uncertain tasks probably feel a lot easier when they're halfway through, because they're like, oh, I kind of know what to say to that person now because I've had that conversation over there, or I've already drafted that thing out, so sending that email is no longer feeling gross. I can probably do that, right? So the momentum of taking action based on how easy does it feel today? Yeah. So you kind of want, when you're in that process of planning, you want the client to put the task down or the actions down that they do find risky or they aren't very certain about, because they are going to need to be done. Trusting that they will feel differently about this as they get into action and into momentum. When you hear that the client is feeling a shit ton of resistance, and they're like, oh, I've only got one doable task left to do and I don't want to do it and it's horrible. It's like, okay, that's resistance. It's really natural, right? And so that just means that that task probably needs to be broken down into a few smaller tasks that feel more doable. Yeah. Oops. Any questions or concerns about plans? How are you feeling about all of that? Anything feel confusing or something you're thinking about? So a couple of things I'll offer here. One is that this approach works quite well if a client is effectively wanting to make habit changes, right? So it might not be what we would probably call a project goal. It's more of a habit goal, right? So, for example, someone who wants to put some focus on their health and fitness, like my last courage-based plan was all about this. I was like, I've got to make some changes. Earlier this year, had some health scares, and I was like, okay, I've got to make some changes. Here's what I'll do. And so what I started with was what feels doable right now was I could take my dog for a walk every morning for 20 minutes around the park, right? So I was like, okay, cool. That feels doable, and it's super fun for me. I like to do that. I'm there. And there were other things like, can I start, instead of getting a sandwich from the store down the road, can I start making my own lunch? It will be way healthier and I'll learn some new recipes. Okay, that feels doable. So I'm committing to 3 times a week, I'm going to cook my own lunch, right? So that started as my, in the first week, that was what I started with. And then I got that momentum and it was like, okay, cool. Now I'm going to extend the duration of my walk. So I'm going to start, you know, doing more things, looking at how can I change another meal? And by the time I got sort of a couple of weeks in, I was like, oh, I can see by the end of this 30 days, I'm really going to want to start doing some strength training. So my next 30-day goal then became more about that kind of thing, right? So all to say, this can work for habits. It's usually about intensity, frequency, and duration when it comes to habits, right? So if you've got a client who wants to maybe set up a morning routine, right? Okay, let's start with 10 minutes in the morning write down three intentions for the day. Like it's that kind of doable sort of thing. See if you can do that, because if you're like, by the end of 30 days, I'm picturing that I'm going to need an hour of undisturbed time to meditate and do yoga and my morning pages and all that. And you've got such a bloody elaborate morning routine, right? And if that's your idea of success, then you set yourself up for failure right from the start, because it's so far away from your lived reality, which is, you know, hit the snooze alarm 14 times until the absolute last minute and then get up, right? So we want to add in just one step. And then once that feels doable, then add in more things. And most people who end up setting up a morning routine realize that they actually only need about 10 minutes and they probably need to do one thing, whether it is, you know, morning pages or yoga or meditation or whatever. We always have this kind of quite moral, I don't know, always seems a bit kind of religious to me. All right, there's a moral aspect to a morning routine. Make me a better person. Yeah. So all to say, like, this can work for habits. This can work for goals. It can also work for quite big things, like big projects. So for people who are doing things like, you know, setting up a business, which feels enormous and overwhelming at the start, your first 30-day goal could be, you know, okay, I'm just going to set up my subscribers list or whatever the first action feels important to do. I'm going to look at, you know, how can I talk to someone every day about my coaching business, kind of thing, you know, that kind of stuff. It's you can have some real fun with it. Right? The idea is, remember, we don't want to give other people the power to decide whether or not we've failed, right? So the goal from I've got to get 5 new clients this month to I'm going to show up every day and talk to somebody about coaching, that shifts the needle a bit, right? Because it's in your control. Any comments, worries, concerns, ponders about plans? All good. And so then we want the client to be taking action. So I am always preparing for the first obstacles that will come up for a client. Sometimes I'll talk about this at the start, but usually I'll just say something like, if it doesn't go to plan, let's see what happens. Like, stay in touch with me over the next couple of weeks and we'll figure it out together, kind of thing. So you, when you're catching up with your client, you're thinking about, you know, what hasn't gone great, what has, what do they want to do differently, how's their protector showing up, are they learning how they can kind of get out of that self-doubt loop quite quickly and support themselves along the way. So if you are starting this process at the beginning of your coaching relationship, this is where you'll go, oh, well, it sounds like you've got a protective belief here. Let's explore, would it be helpful to explore that a little bit and see why that's coming up for this particular thing? And then you've got some really great approaches for looking at that, you know, whether it's uncovering the belief to start with or going through a belief buster or something like that. But the idea is that we assume as coaches that, you know, obstacles and setbacks and challenges are part of the goal. Like, that's not the reason to quit. It's not a sign from the universe that you shouldn't be doing this, right? It's just a setback. Sometimes they're going to be really unexpected and things you couldn't have predicted. But I heard this analogy not long ago of, you know, if you go on holiday and you've sketched out your route and then you find there's roadworks on it, you don't abandon your car and go, well, the holiday's off, right? You figure it out. So it's this kind of thing, right? Well, this is what we want to do. Maybe it will take a bit longer to get there and maybe you'll be a bit more exhausted by the time you get there. But what can you do to resource yourself in the moment of those obstacles coming up? I think this part, when the client's taking action, this is where it gets more fun for coaching, I think, because then you're helping them to do that piece of expanding, and you know, they get to have, you know, choice points. Am I going to do what I've always done, or am I going to do something new? Am I going to, you know, show myself a new side of myself here? Because I already know what happens if I do my old way. Right? I shared this story with a supervision group earlier in the last week about I was halfway through my MA and I was on a train. I had a 3-hour train journey and I had to finish an essay that I'd already asked for an extension for and it was already late with because I'd been fucking around with it, to be fair. That's the only technical term I can come up with. And I literally had like till the end of that train journey to hand it in or I was going to fail my MA. Like it was very clear. And I would describe myself back then as pretty good at flaking on myself. Like, and I would have told myself a pretty good story about that to justify it to myself. Like, oh, I was so stressed and I was really trying hard, but it wasn't for me. And who needs academia? Blah, blah, blah. And I just thought, oh, I can see what I'm doing here. I could just finish this. I've got, you know, at this point, 2 hours and 10 minutes. Sod it. I'm doing it. And it was like I just made the decision. I'm going to finish this essay. I'm not failing this. And I ended up getting the lowest mark for that essay out of the whole course. I didn't even hand in a proper bibliography because I just couldn't be asked. I was like, I cannot do that and this. So you're getting my thoughts and you're getting my raw notes, which had things like, you know, that German dude instead of the bibliography thing with my like notes. And my professor said to me, this is really not up to scratch, but I appreciate, you know, we appreciate the effort, blah, blah. And it wasn't even like an essay. You had to do a poster with it. So freaking annoying, right? Like, are we at high school? Anyway, I handed the thing in and I got the lowest mark. And it turned out when I graduated, I was 2 marks away from getting distinction. And if I hadn't been screwing around with that essay, just handed it in, not procrastinated, I would have got distinction. But it doesn't matter to me because in that moment, I proved to myself that I can do this thing. I can be different. I don't have to be that flaky person. I can change how I see myself. And I can't even tell you how many times I've thought of that moment. It's like, I'm on the train. I've got to get this done. And I've pulled that out of the bag because I know that that is in me, right? There's a part of me that can do that. And it might not be perfect, but it will be done. And that is hugely satisfying, you know? So all to say, I think, you know, there are those choice moments when we commit to something like a goal that's where we stretch. That's where we grow. And in the end, the goal itself doesn't really matter that much. It is genuinely about who the client becomes on the way. And what I found is they only need a couple of those moments to go, I am freaking doing this. This is the thing that I'm doing. And I think there is a bit of a trajectory that tends to happen where it will go from being possible, like a very fat maybe, right, at the start, maybe I'll do this, I don't really know, I'm kind of holding back on myself to see if I actually follow through. At some point it becomes like, you know, it goes from sort of possible to probable, but there is a point at some point during this process, if they stay in action, where it becomes inevitable, and that's the really fun part, because then it's like, it's only a matter of time. Like, I'm doing this. I know exactly what my tasks are and where I'm going and actions I need to take. And it's a thing. It's going to be in my life. I'm going to have this thing that I've wanted. And that is just, that's priceless, right? Because it doesn't actually matter what the goal is. It's what that does for the client's self-belief, self-trust. It's enormous. It's enormous. So even if you maybe don't love goals, and not everyone does, I think it's a really great opportunity to play with this with your clients. Jane was getting really excited this morning, and she was like, oh, I think I could run this as a like a group program to get some like supported accountability for her clients. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. I've run this before as a group program, you know, with like weekly calls, and it can be so fun because everyone kind of gets on board with it. And 30 days is a nice chunk of time for people to kind of commit to and see if they love it. So, you know, all to say, like, you know, really do, if this appeals to you, do play with this. A lot of the coaches that have come through SBCA have sort of gone, oh, this is the way in, because I know goals, I'm excited about this. So this is the way I can get in with my clients, and then we can start to look at all the ways self-doubt comes up along the way. And that's ideal and perfect. Yeah. Thoughts, ideas? What's coming up for you all?
I got one. If you were a spiritual coach, you could sync it with the phases of the moon. It's about 30 days. And then like the end goal is the full moon.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. You, I mean, you can use any analogies you like that will fit with your clients, and they'll lap it up, right? Cause it's all fun. It's all good fun, right? If I think this is, that's the thing. You get to be super creative with this stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Moon's a great one. Tina, I'm noticing some of your art in the background. There is a kind of witchy feel to your stuff. So, yeah.
I have to be a bit careful, yeah.
Just... I would fly that freak flag. Yeah. And even, I think, you know, people who follow, like, cyclical living and seasonal, you know, more of that kind of pagan energy stuff would agree. And, you know, I think for anyone who works with women who are interested in their own, like, cycles and stuff like that, it can be really fun as well. Like, just noticing when you want to retreat and when you're really ready to take big action. It's great. All power to you, Tina. Love it. Anyone else want to share? Yeah, Jane.
This is off topic, but it keeps coming up, like watching last week's call and then this week's. This, I watched this video of a professor who built her career on helping women and business people overcome imposter syndrome. And then she gave a commencement address at a college recently. So if you can find the video, it will be a better articulation than what I'm going to do. But basically, she did more research and found a correlation between the invention of imposter syndrome and when bicycles were invented, and they had a syndrome that women would get from riding a bicycle, and that basically it was created because they didn't want women to have more freedom, and they basically created the sphere of what it feels like to experience something new. So like what it feels like to challenge yourself and go outside of your comfort zone, they labeled it as a syndrome so that people are like looking for it and then stopping themselves because they are looking for that experience. And it was such an interesting reframe of how to think of imposter syndrome.
I love that so much. And I think Clance and Eames, the two researchers that kind of came up with imposter syndrome, would agree that that's how the media took their research and kind of bastardized it. And there's been so many folks who've looked at this, you know, is this a thing? Is it a gendered thing? And it's not. Like, that's the thing. Imposter syndrome will come, that feeling of fraudulence and not being good enough, if we want to broaden it, will come up whenever there is a sense of intellectual competition. So it comes up, you know, in all kinds of spheres, and it's nothing to do with being, you know, gendered women.
Mm-hmm.
What I find fascinating is that That is what the media did to it. They said, here's a research project of 150 women, and it was in the 70s. So it was like, see, look what happens when you leave the home. Look what happens when you think you can play in the man's world, you know? It's going to make you feel horrible. It was, yeah, very, very true. Yeah, I love that. And yeah, bicycles are super dangerous. There's a poem that I have somewhere in my archives, and it's all about, yeah, bicycles and pockets, and that having a pocket in your dress was seen as like sedition because you could carry a notebook, you could have thoughts, you know, like that whole thing is, yeah, it's just brilliant. I love it so much. Yeah. In England, there is a long history of a community organization called the Women's Institute. And it's a bit kind of parodied now, but in the sort of early 20th century, it was because women had access to bicycles and they could gather in town halls and, you know, plan charitable things and do that stuff. But they could also share stories. And that, you know, that is credited with a lot of the suffragette movement and, you know, leading on to women getting imposter syndrome because they've got big jobs. Yeah, really fun. I think that's the thing is, you know, when folks start to see that, oh, I'm actually not a procrastinator, I just respond to the feeling of risk by avoiding the task, right? That's not my personality, it's not a blood type, it's just a very understandable behavioral response. When that no longer feels necessary, like the idea that of what you could do, be, have, it is, you know, impossible to measure. It's like, we crack on, whatever you want. No one's going to stop you. There are no bars on the windows. You know, you can literally do whatever feels good to you, you know. And we need, you know, many more diverse voices doing and saying that. Yeah, really cool. So yes, yeah,
I have a lot of like off the wall thoughts that are not related, but the other thing that I came home from a trip to South Dakota with just like this moment of, oh, it's all made up and you can just make it up. Cause I met a guy who is a self-proclaimed paleontologist who found all these fossils in Florida, moved them to South Dakota. And he's like, yeah, universities refer to me and my work. But he's just such a weird dude. And it's like, I don't know if any of this is true, or if you're just making this up, but it's like, you can just make a whole lifetime of a career just deciding to do it and proclaiming it. And it was like, white men, I feel like, do this all the time, and it blows my mind because I'm like, wait, you could just make this up?
Yeah. yeah. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, when you actually start to look at all the things we think are real, like the rules that we've decided are real and the consequences and all, just all of those things, you start to realize, oh, someone just went, that's how things should be, and a few other people, white men, agreed with them, and then that's just become the thing. But if we turn around and go, the emperor has no clothes, this does not work for me, no, I'm not buying it, it's literally like okay to do that. Like, yeah
I guess to relate it to the courage-based plan, it's sort of like, yeah, if you could just make it up, yeah, what feels more doable?
Yeah. Do you know, I worked with a client, you're reminding me, I worked with a client a few years ago now, because I did used to do a bit of stuff around cognitive coaching, particularly around like body acceptance work, very much way before like body positivity or any, I didn't really understand all of that. But I worked with a woman who was in a very big body. And she had gone rowing one weekend with a family member and just fallen in love with it. And we made up a goal for her that she was going to become an Olympic rower, because that made her giggle so much. And she was just like, you know, if people ever questioned her, you know, her right to be there, she would say, oh, no, I'm training for the Olympics. Like, this is a thing. And it was so funny. But that was the thing that she really wanted, to cherish her body and be close to the water. So this was a way to do that. But just the Olympic rowing thing, like, you can make up a goal, and who gives a shit whether it's achievable or not? It's what it means to you and how it makes you feel in yourself, you know, in your self-concept. That's the thing that matters. And she just had an absolute ball. She loved it. It's really cool. So, you know, there are no rules. There are no rules. You get to be silly with this as well. Yeah. Really cool. All right, loves. Next week, we're going to talk more about kind of the sort of behavioral change approach, just because I think that comes up so much in the literature and in the research. And I think it's a helpful way of sort of viewing the whole program and just sort of seeing where your clients might be and in their stages of change and how you can best support them. And we'll sort of do a nice roundup of the program before we have our closing. So just take care of yourselves. If you want to play with 30-day goals, highly recommend doing that, especially if you think, oh, I might use this with my clients. Use your practice pods to come up with a goal, get real clarity on it, crack on with a plan and start taking action. See what comes up for you. See if you recognize your patterns of resistance and things like that. What can you do to support yourself? It's an amazing process to go through so that when you're working with clients, you're talking from it rather than about it, you know? Really cool. All right, loves, enjoy. I'll see you next week. Okay. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Bye.